Hi, and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Toolkit team in the Android framework.
I'm Tor Norby from the Tools team in the Android team.
And today we have a special guest, unsurprisingly, since we tend to have guests. This is...
I'm Jeff Hamilton. I'm from the Google Play Services team, so I lead the engineering effort on the team.
On the entire team? On the entire Android team?
On the entire Google Play Services
team. Okay. Sort of subset. Yes. But very important subset. So I'm hoping to learn a lot about Google Play Services today, how to spell it, acronyms around it, important things like that.
That was actually my first question, is I've heard of, you know, GMS, GCM. Can you give us the overview of what these different pieces are?
Sure. So Google Play Services is generally an API framework that we provide from Google on top of Android. And it primarily contains Google services that are backed up by Google servers. So some examples of that would be Google Plus APIs or Google Drive. So it's a way for Android developers to get native Android development experience, to talk to Google backend servers and stuff that's run by Google.
And is that by design? Like that it's typically cloudy APIs, or do you actually have UI widgets in there that are sort of?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I mean, primarily it's stuff to deal with cloud services that are running on Google servers. Even in that realm, we do have a bunch of native UI widgets on the device. So a good example there would be if you're using the Google Play Games APIs that we have included. It's a cloud service. It's a social gaming platform that we have where you can do achievements and leaderboards and multiplayer. But we do provide nice Android UI to games so that they can display we provide an activity they can launch to display their achievements for the user, or display leaderboards or waiting rooms for multiplayer stuff.
Okay. I just want to point out the phrase cloudy API is wonderful. I wish I'd start using
that's right.
For everything.
Yeah.
That we do in the back end, because it's kind of vague to me anyway, so it's actually a perfect description.
Magic 8-Ball says this API looks cloudy.
Yes.
So anyway, when you talk about Play Services, do you say Play Services, or is it an abbreviation you use? And is it PS, or is it GMS, or is it GCM?
So typically, internally, we call it GMS Core, just kind of code name internally.
And why? So GMS stands for?
Google Mobile Suite.
I was confusing with messaging.
I thought it had messaging in there, too.
Yeah, so GCM has messaging. That's Google Cloud Messaging.
Is that a part of Play Services?
Yes, it is now. So we've had a bunch of services that kind of been in the Google Cloud have kind of migrated into Google Play Services over time.
Okay.
And GCM is one of those.
And so GMS Core, does that mean that there's things outside the core, and are those?
No, I mean, so GMS is just the name that's given to the set of Google applications that we ship.
Okay, so core just makes it sound more hardcore.
It's an API platform that a lot of those applications are built on.
I see.
But those APIs are also available to third-party developers, so third-party apps can use those APIs as well.
And is that only confusing to us because we're internal and hear that? Like, do people externally, have they ever heard of GMS Core?
It's kind of an internal name.
So this is irrelevant for us to have spent the last 2 minutes on. Google Play Services.
But GCM, I've heard of.
Yes.
GCM, right.
Google Cloud Messaging.
Yeah, Google Cloud Messaging, and that's something that's that's been around for a long time. It's been around much longer than Google Play Services has, but the APIs that the developer uses to access that have moved into to Google Play Services.
Okay, so if there's all these services, all these cloudy APIs, that's just so awesome. I've repeated that as many times as I can. All these cloudy services that people want access to store their files on Drive or to access G+ APIs or messaging or whatever, surely they had a way of doing this before, right? So what was the approach prior to Google Play Services, which came online a year ago?
A little over a year ago, September, a year back. Prior to that, you could go directly to Google servers and you could talk to RESTful APIs and you could do JSON parsing yourself and you could do a lot of that stuff.
I have tried, and not being a web developer, I can admit that I have failed.
So I think one of the things we add is you don't have to do the JSON parsing yourself. You get nice kind of Java data structures to deal with. Another nice thing that we do is we call it a thick client. So we have in the implementation, we talk to those same endpoints in the RESTful APIs, but we do a bunch of things like offline writes. So if you want to write something to the cloud, you call an API in Google Play Services, and we'll store that in a database for you on the device, and we'll get it to the cloud as soon as we possibly can. But if you're offline or, you know, there's a bad network connection for some reason, you know, we'll handle the retries for you. So you don't have to worry about that in your application, and that's really one nice advantage of using, you know, our APIs versus going directly to the REST endpoints on the servers.
So what are the different areas that Play Services addresses? You mentioned gaming so far. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very long list, so, you know, I apologize if I leave something out.
We have a lot of time here. Actually, we're going to go get a cup of coffee.
So, you know, we started out with authentication, so you can get OAuth 2 tokens. Yep. You know, it's kind of a fairly new authentication scheme that's not supported in all versions of the Android platform. So, if, you know, if you want to talk to kind of new Google APIs, you want to use the authentication APIs inside Google Play Services. You know, we added APIs for Google Plus, so you can, you know, share it to Google Plus. You can also you know, read out the list of people that are in the currently signed in users circles, so you can do, you know, kind of social things within your application. We added, you know, map view, so you can, you know, live embed, you know, Google Maps into your application.
So we used to have a map view. So yes. how was this different?
So the map view that we had before is built into the Android platform, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, it's included in the ROM on the devices, and so it, you know, to update it requires updating you know, the Android platform version.
Right.
And you know.
So that was the old stale one that did like image tiles and didn't do vector graphics.
Right.
Okay.
And so in the new one, you know, it's basically the new code base from the map rendering engine from, you know, the Google Maps application. It does, you know, the vector art. It doesn't download tiles. It has, you know, 3D buildings, and you can do all sorts of fancy things to, you know, put it in perspective mode. And
you can put that in your own app.
Yeah, so you embed it in your application.
And I guess more importantly, as the Maps group makes more important changes to the underlying infrastructures, they can then push a change mm-hmm. to that thing the developers can get right. for their own applications.
Yeah, so kind of going back a little bit, in general, Google Play Services is delivered through the Google Play Store. And so updates, you know, can happen on a fairly regular basis. And we can update the implementation details of the code on devices where, you know, we're not delivering system image updates. So mm-hmm. we're not updating the operating system itself.
So is that a deliberate strategy to basically put more and more functionality into this library so that you can target all devices rather than waiting for them to get up to the latest version of Android?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we're intentionally moving things here just to be able to update them. I think, you know, we're putting things in that make sense that are, you know, backed by Google services.
Right.
So one of the nice things that, you know, the nice properties that we have is by, you know, by having this kind of update mechanism through the Play Store that, you know, we can update the implementation, we can get bug fixes out, we can roll out new features to lots of, you know, older devices that wouldn't necessarily get operating system updates.
How often do you do updates?
It depends, but, you know, roughly every 6 to 8 weeks.
Depends on how many podcasts he has to say. Are these updates that the users choose? Are they told that there is an update for their application, which is actually implicitly an update for Google Play Services, mm-hmm. and they need to go to the Play Store? Is it done automatically? Or what's the push mechanism?
So the updates are happen primarily. They happen automatically. So the update will happen on the device. If you're writing an application that is using an API, you know, maybe a newer API that's just been released, if for some reason, you know, the Play Store has not updated Google Play Services on the user's device yet, you'll get an error code when you try to use the API that essentially says, you know, the implementation detail is out of date. And in the client library we provide that's linked into every application, there's some error dialogues. So if you get back an error code saying, hey, you know, there's a problem, either, you know, it's up to date or it's not up to date, or, you know, the user has disabled it or it's not installed for some reason, you get an error code telling you that, and we have some kind of baked-in UI in our client library that you can present to the user. It has strings that are already translated for all languages that say, you know, this is the problem, and a button that you press on to go fix it somehow. So if Google Play Services is disabled by the user in the, you know, the application manager, they can, you know, the button will take you to that settings page to re-enable it. If it's out of date, it will take you to the deep link into the Play Store, and the user can manually update the.
It seems like we could, services. You know, if you updated your app, it seems like the Play client should know that this app depends on Play Services, this version. It should be able to, like, at the same time mm-hmm. update it if it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, the Play Store is doing a lot of work behind yeah. the scenes to make sure the Play Services is up to date. But yeah. users might choose to uninstall it, or
right.
they might, you know, yeah. there are various reasons it might not be up to date. So, We have, you know, APIs to kind of handle that in our client library.
So is the only trigger getting an application that depends on a newer version than you happen to have? Or like, will, when you push a new version to the Play Store, mm-hmm. is that new version then automatically propagated to users' devices?
Yeah. So it will automatically, you know, install on almost all devices.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a few cases where it won't, but that's really kind of an edge case. So,
okay.
So from a developer's point of view, it's fairly safe to assume that it's going to be
that
there.
That is there, but if it's not, there's a flow for the user to fix it.
Yeah, it's going to be the latest version, but yeah, there's a few cases where that might not be the case, so you do have to make sure to kind of handle that in your application.
Okay. So can you explain how Play Services acts like a library? Because it sounds like it's also mm-hmm. installed as an app. So
yes.
With most libraries, you know, when you install this, it bloats up your APK a bit, your app a bit, because, you know, you're including all the code from the library.
Right.
Here it sounds like, well, the code is delivered through this separate app, and so the stuff that goes in your... Okay, so first of all, how much are we adding to our apps if we add this library? And right. B, is this like a shared library? Do we have...
It's like a shared library yeah. with a statically linked, like, wrapper
yeah.
library?
So it's complicated, but... So it's both a static library that you link into your application and an extra application that sits next to yours on mm-hmm. the device. And so the static library that we deliver in our SDK is really, you know, we intend for it to be a kind of a thin shim. So we try not to put very much business logic in there. It's primarily...
So you don't get all of, like, Google Maps into right. your app. That is yes. part of a separate thing. Okay.
Right. You just get like Iowa and Idaho. Some of the yeah. stuff in the middle that otherwise you may not have chosen.
Based on your right. location. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the you know, the amount of space that's added to your app, there are a few images for you know, like Google Plus sign-in buttons and strings for the, you know, like we were talking before about the error mm-hmm. handling. Mm-hmm. But the library itself isn't particularly large compared to the, you know, the implementation of the full set of APIs we have. And what that library primarily does is it sets up an IPC link between your application running in your process and the Google Play Services application running in a separate process. And when you make API calls, they go through the binder across to the implementations running in the Google Play Services process.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So,
because inter-process communication should be really low overhead compared to the fact that these are cloudy right. APIs, so they're talking yeah. over the network.
Yeah, those are not like rendering calls in the middle of the interrupt.
Yeah, because right. there might be some animation issues there, right, Chet?
Except there never are.
Yes.
Never. Yeah, never.
Yeah. So in general, the APIs that we set up, because there is, you know, compared to making the network call, they're going to be, you know, fairly yeah. Yeah. inexpensive. But sometimes these calls actually do hit the network. Primarily, our APIs are set up to be asynchronous. So almost the vast majority of our APIs, especially the ones that, you know, that directly interact with the network. You know, you make a call saying, "Hey, I want to read this data or I want to write something," and you pass in a callback, callback object, and that callback gets delivered when the request completes, and that gets delivered on your main thread, so you can go mess up your animations in response or something.
Excellent. So we got partway through an answer when Tor and I came back from our coffee and you didn't finish the exhaustive list of what's actually in there.
Sure.
I guess I can ask maybe a meta question, which is, do the APIs essentially span all of those services that we provide? Like you can go to the Google Developer Dashboard, I forget the name, mm-hmm. I somehow magically find it and then lose it again,
yeah.
where it lists like all the services that you can hook into and get the JSON data for, mm-hmm. for, you know, analytics and Blogger and G+ and all that stuff.
Right.
OAuth too, of course. Is that the stuff that's in there? Or is it a subset of those that we think would be interesting to Android developers and there's more over time or less
yeah.
over time?
Yeah, I think, you know, right now it's a subset of those things. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take a look back, historically we've been adding, you know, with each release we're adding, you know, 1 to 2 kind of new full API surfaces. So, you know, we're working to add more over time. Our goal is to kind of get the full set of things that are really, you know, relevant for mobile developers. So there are a few things that, you know, don't make sense on mobile devices, but for pretty much everything that does make sense, our goal is to, you know, to include those.
Do you have code in there so that, I mean, first of all, what is your MinSDK version for Play Services?
So currently the MinSDK version is Gingerbread. So,
okay, so 9?
Yeah, so 9. When we first started, it was Froyo 8, and we basically dropped Froyo support in our recent, in Google Play Services 4.0. So,
right, I think the API share of Froyo is pretty small now. I think we're talking at most a percent.
Yeah, it's around 1% or so.
So does that mean applications that were, help me understand what happens, if sure. they were using Google Play Services, they would no longer work there, or
no,
they would they would still be locked into whatever version of Google Play Services library they compiled with.
Right. They'll be locked into the version, that the last most recent version, which is I think 3.2.66 or something.
Okay. So is there anything that in your code that is sort of done conditionally that doesn't work? Like, are there, is there functionality that requires higher versions of Android, but we provide empty steps, or everything, the full suite of stuff works?
To date, the full suite of stuff works.
Wow.
So all the APIs work back to Gingerbread. You know, over time, it's possible that might change, but right now, that's the case. So if you get our SDK, you know, we kind of support all of those APIs from, you know, for now, for Gingerbread on.
So you had said before that there were ways to access functionality before, and basically you're doing web development stuff, and then you get back this data, and then you turn that into objects or whatever, consume the JSON data, however you want, which is the part that I can never figure out. There's other stuff, though, like the OAuth stuff. That was something we actually had a solution for on the platform to make it easier, right? The authentication manager? Is that And this is a migration from that?
Account manager, yeah.
Account manager, thank you.
So the implementation, you know, we have kind of two APIs now. So there's one in Google Play Services that does, you know, Google-specific things. The account manager has plugins that, you know, there's a Google account plugin. There's also, it's called authenticators. They're authenticators for other, you know, it's a pluggable system. So they're authenticators for other services as well that aren't from Google.
Okay. So it's a generic authentication mechanism.
Right. So the one in Google Play Services is specific to Google. So if you want to interact with Google, that's probably the one to use.
Right. I mean, it streamlined that. I had tried to use that one, and there was sort of a bunch of steps that you went through, and it seemed like it streamlined this, especially with the new stuff with OAuth 2.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem with OAuth 2 is a lot of the Google servers are moving to, you know, require OAuth 2 support, and older versions of the Android platform don't support OAuth 2 in, you know, the implementation of the Google authenticator doesn't support OAuth 2.
Okay. So. And were there other mechanisms where there used to be a different approach on Android, not just the web developer approach of like querying the REST APIs, but some other system that we had provided, which was like ossifying in old versions of the platform, or is that the main?
Yeah, so I think the other really good example of that, so we've talked already about MapView a little bit, so we have a newer implementation of MapView than what's in the platform today. Another one is the location services. So I think those are primarily the three ones. It's auth, maps, and location.
Okay.
So for location services, we have a new API in Google Play Services that has better accuracy on older devices. On newer devices, it's basically the same implementation. So it's the same as using the platform APIs, but like on a Froyo device, for example, if you use the APIs of Google Play Services, the location results you get back will be much more accurate.
Okay.
So in our last episode, we talked to Adrian from the security team, and he ran some queries on all the apps in the Play Store to sort of see which permissions people are using and sort of made a list of it. Do you have a sense of which parts of Blaze services are used by apps? Like, what are the most common areas?
We've done a little bit of research into that. I think we haven't done probably as much as Adrian has in terms of querying all the apps that are out there and looking at what they're doing. So,
do you have a sense of sort of what the most like where you had the most growth potentially? Like, what under this is your chance to sort of sell parts of the library that you wish people were aware of, like your favorite features or
I think we have lots of different things, and it really depends on what you're doing in your application. We have APIs to do payments that I think probably aren't used as much as they could be. So if you want to sell physical goods, we have APIs that you.
If you want to make money.
Yeah, if you want to make money.
The APIs for taking payments. If I could just implement those and controls in, that'd be good.
So yeah, there are APIs where for with Google Wallet, if the user has a Google Wallet set up and their credit card there, you can go get access to their credit card information. Obviously, with them having consented to that, of course. in terms of making money, we also have APIs for AdMob as well, so you can put ads in your application.
Okay.
So, speaking of which, not really. Actually, that's not a comfortable segue at all. Ficus gave a talk at Google I.O. on Volley, which is a library they came up with for doing a lot of network and cache stuff, especially around like bitmaps and sort of complicated network stuff that a lot of developers end up doing on their own. And they had continually sort of re-rolled stuff and building on top of functionality on top of the framework. And then they finally encapsulated it into the standalone library. What's your relationship with things like that we do internally as something, and especially when we expose and say, here, use this thing, we found it useful, you may as well. Is that something that would then find its way into Google Play Services or support lib or framework or?
Yeah. I think in general, to answer the question, it kind of depends on what, you know, what it is specifically with Volley. You know, it's a great library. We use it internally for all of our network traffic.
Okay, but it's not specific to Google Services, so maybe it wouldn't be exposed as the surface area of the API.
Yeah. So Volley, I think, is open source, and you can use it to talk to any servers, and it's a great library. We love it. But we use that to talk to Google servers in our implementation.
Okay.
But yeah, I think with some other things.
So you're a user, not a reseller.
Right.
Okay. I get it.
Yes.
A client, not a pimp. I mean, if we're going to want to do more, you know what, I'm going to move on from there. So I also wanted to ask about your relationship to the support library, which has been a sort of an expanding effort on the framework team to build a new functionality in support lib for compatibility and sort of availability reasons. But I think I understand better now. The distinction is basically like capability that could be supported, compatibly in older versions, as opposed to capability specific to Google Services.
Right.
Right. I mean, that seems to be where it falls down. Because it's really nice, I guess, that Google Play Services exists so that when we come up with something saying, well, a lot of people would really love access to whatever it is, Blogger, everybody wants to write to the Blogger APIs, that we don't have to push that into the framework, which tends to be more agnostic, ideally.
Right.
Right? This is functionality for the platform of this mobile device, as opposed to it's a Google thing.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And I think specifically with the support library, right, that covers kind of framework compatibility and handling backwards compatibility to new framework APIs.
Well, the support library has been sort of split into many different portions. There's like five of them now. There's support, there's the app compat, there's some media stuff, there's grid layout. Do you have plans to do that with Play Services to make it sort of independent chunks, or is it already small enough that?
I think as the API surface grows, I think we'll probably explore doing stuff like that. We don't have any concrete plans to announce at this point in time, but we have, the API surface is getting fairly large. And
well, speaking of concrete plans, do you have anything on the public roadmap? I mean, do you know what you're doing next, or is that going to be like, stay tuned for an exciting announcement?
Stay tuned for exciting announcements.
All right, my favorite Android answer.
Yeah,
I can't really.
Before I.O., at I.O., after I.O.
So we haven't promised anything publicly. Okay. Right. Well, that's a good position to be in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see. An update schedule, when do these things come out? Or historically, since you wouldn't commit to anything in the future?
We aim for roughly every 6 to 8 weeks. So.
And is that like small functionality tweaks, or do you, implement or expose new API services in those updates?
We do kind of everything. So typically, if we have an API surface, usually one API surface won't go through significant changes every 6 to 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. But we'll have new API surfaces come in, and then maybe some older ones will get some new features, some new features added or bug fixes and things like that. So,
well, what kinds of compatibility goals do you have for the API? Is it supposed to not change, or do you sort of, or is it all tagged as at beta and be prepared to update your code?
In general, we kind of say we don't we support these APIs. We don't expect them to change, similar to Android platform stuff. An interesting kind of thing that we're going through is, as we discussed earlier, the client library that you build into your application talks to the implementation through IPC, through the binder interface. So the client library we provide, the Java layer there, is actually, that's not where binary compatibility is implemented. So binary compatibility is actually at the IPC link. And so that as long as we don't change, that IPC link, we actually have already and are going to in the future make some more changes to the Java programming interface. And so that that doesn't maintain source compatibility, and we hope that as we make these changes it kind of improves things for developers as they have to make some minor changes to their source. But existing applications they've deployed through Play Store will not break.
Because you at the binary level can do, if you're talking to this version of the library, we expect two parameters and if not three, that kind of thing.
Right.
That's cool.
And so, I think an interesting example of what we're doing there is if you see in the most recent version we released, we provided, you asked about developer previews. So we provided kind of a developer preview of the Google Drive API. And that also includes, you know, some new general infrastructure for doing, you know, connecting to the Google Play services and, you know, figuring out is it installed and is everything, you know, set up. It's basically a nice layer over a service connection. And, you know, kind of mark that stuff developer preview because we, you know, we're working to kind of bring that general structure of the API to the other API surfaces over time. Hmm. And, you know, we kind of want to be able to change the Java layer a little bit as we do that. But because, you know, that stuff, all that code is implemented in the client jar that's statically linked into each application, as we change that, you know, to update to new client jars, you're going to have to modify your source a little bit, but existing applications that you've deployed in the wild to users will continue to operate properly because the IPC interface is not changing at all.
So a couple of episodes ago, and I'd just like to point out, I think we're really good and subtle about how we reference ourselves and advertise and plug previous episodes. A couple of episodes ago, we talked to Jeff Sharkey about Storage Access Framework. Mm-hmm. And one of the services it provides is better and easier mapping to services such as Drive.
Right. Right.
So do you hook into Storage Access Framework, or is this more like, this is a parallel way that developers, especially if developers prior to KitKat, mm-hmm. would access functionality to be able to store and retrieve files from?
Yeah, so this is kind of the latter. If you want to do Google Drive specific stuff, mm-hmm. You can use this. On KitKat, you know, there is a Google Drive plugin to the Storage Access Framework, so you can kind of use that if you want of the general purpose system, but mm-hmm. on older versions of the platform, or if you want to go specifically to Drive, you can use the Drive API.
Okay.
And you know, over time, I think the Drive API will grow and kind of, you know, handle more Drive specific operations that aren't covered under, you know, the KitKat platform.
Right, which is more API. Of a generic storage mechanism.
Right.
So one of the things that we had discussed in this prior episode, which I would encourage listeners to check out.
Smooth. Really smooth.
is how much are we paying for these sponsorships of our own episodes? Because yeah. It's costing us a ton. the support lib story around that, like how do mm-hmm. people access this new functionality on older platforms? And the answer was, well, it's framework functionality, so there wasn't really a support story. So I guess the more complete answer would be you should check out Google Play services, specifically in the Drive case. Like if right. that's what you're looking to store and retrieve from, mm-hmm. Then that's how you would get that functionality. I think there was a more manual mechanism, I guess, through the REST APIs, or there was
the Drive stuff just launched recently, in the last couple of weeks. So okay. I think maybe when you talked to the other Jeff a while back,
he probably couldn't commit on future developments.
Probably not.
Yeah. So. Because we all like our jobs. Okay. I think I get it better than I did. Actually, I'm curious to check it out. Which leads me to the next question, which is, an external developer would like to access some of these functionalities. They would like to get access to the Blogger APIs, and they know they need OAuth.
Yeah.
What is it they need to do on their machine and their device to mm-hmm. actually start building and deploying with Google Play services?
Sure. So, you know, on your development machine, if you go to the SDK manager, there's a down in the extras section, there's a Google Play services entry there. So if you, you know, click that, install that through the SDK manager, then you know, our client jar becomes available you know, locally. If you're using Android Studio and the Gradle build system, if you install the
Google repository.
The Google repository. So we also have a copy of the Google Play Services client jar in the Google repository that, you know, plugs into Android Studio through the Gradle build system, so you can just reference it directly in Gradle. And then, you know, build the client library into your application, and you're good to go. And all of these services become available to your application.
And then the runtime is just there. Now, the other part is they would then need to test it on their device. So they deploy their application that's statically linked against this thing, and the device would complain if it doesn't have the right version and take mm-hmm. them through the user flow.
Yeah, take them to the Play Store to update.
Right.
But okay. Hopefully, for most devices, they'll be up to date anyway. So.
And emulator ships with Play services in it as well?
The Google emulator image that we have has a copy of Play services included. I think that right now we might not have the most recent version installed in the emulator image that we're shipping, but we're working to fix that.
Okay.
Just going back a little bit, one thing I want, you know, forgot.
Do you
to
have
mention.
An episode you want to plug?
No. Okay. Right. I hear the one about the storage framework.
The fourth episode rocked.
Yeah. I hear the one about the storage framework was great. Anyway, so for some of the APIs, you know, or a good number of the APIs that work with the, you know, the cloudy APIs, if you will, you have to go to the Google Developer Console, which is, you know, this thing you mentioned earlier. If you go to the Google Play Services documentation, which is at developer.android.com/Google, there's some documentation there as to how to get to the Developer Console. But for a bunch of the APIs, you need to go and, you know, register your application in that Developer Console. You just need to register once. You know, even if you have like a, you know, web app or corresponding, you know, you want to access this on other platforms than Android, you know, you register your application once across all platforms there in the, you know, the Google Developer Console,
right,
which is separate from the Google Play, you know, upload system.
Is that where you get like the equivalent of a Google Maps
key
to put into your app?
Yeah. So for Maps, you need a key. Most of the APIs we have, you don't need a key. You just kind of need to enable that API. And then you put in the package name of your application, and then you put in, you know, some, you know, thing that kind of represents the certificate you use to sign your application.
And that information goes through in the OAuth 2 mechanism, right?
So when you make a call through Play Services, in general, we'll get an auth token for you that represents your application. So we'll kind of securely identify your application that's making the API call.
And then, so that means I can't take someone else's APK, look at the strings, find their map key, or not string. I guess that would be an integer, not a string. But, you know, I can't steal it because there's also some authentication based on the package and signing.
Yeah, the package and the certificate used to sign it. So even if you go in and modify the package and re-sign it, then...
Okay, so as a developer, it's not problematic for me to put that key right in the source code because it's not really secure anyway, or it's not really a secret.
Yeah, so if you have the keys, then those, you know, I don't actually know too much about the keys specifically, but for the APIs that don't use the keys, which are, you know, most of the APIs that we use in the cloud, they just do it based on the package name and the certificate.
Okay, and then the ones that do require a key, things like Maps, and I think Analytics is another one, like there's also a usage limit as well, like how many times can you hammer on this API or how much data are you requesting?
And those
have nothing to do with Google Play Services, it's just, you know, restrictions of those APIs and services.
Yeah, so for MapView, if you use the MapView through Google Play Services, there's no restriction on the, you know, amount of data you can...
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought I had played around with Analytics and... I thought there was number of times.
Yeah, it's per service. So Maps specifically, there's not a limit. I don't recall off the top of my head on Analytics. Yeah. But
So if you're like a serious user of one of these services where there is some other restriction for you, you'd have to check that out.
But yeah, so if you go to the Google Developer Console, you kind of have to enable each of these services, and it will tell you there what, you know, what kind of limits are not are present.
So I don't know a lot about analytics, but I know that many, many years ago in the C++ world, you know, for a tool I was working on, we had usage tracking. So sort of, you know, this opt-in thing where we could track each action you did so we can know sort of, you know, what the common paths were in the debugger. It was working on a debugger. So every time we hit, you know, F7 to step into, you know, we'd count that and it would generate a report. Is that something that analytics would be good for? Like to actually, if I want to sort of just, you know, track how, which parts of my app is being used.
Yeah. Google Analytics, I think, is a great product to track that. They have done a bunch of work recently to support, you know, tracking events inside applications and
great.
And stuff like that. So.
And so those APIs are part of Play Services?
No, they're not.
Okay, I see. So,
we have some stuff in Analytics.
We should have planned this better.
Analytics is an interesting one where the APIs are not part of Google Play Services, but if you're using the client jar that the Analytics team provides. When you create, you know, they're called hits, or you can create analytics events, and Google Play Services installed on the device, those hits will get proxied through Google Play Services, and we kind of aggregate them from multiple applications to make sure that we, you know, save power and the radio.
Oh, so that's good for battery.
Yeah, we don't have like 10 applications all independently uploading analytics events. We kind of grab them all together and upload them in a single shot.
That was the point of GCM originally, right? That you didn't want every single app to install its own service, which woke up at its own interval and did its own network connection to its server. It was like you sort of wanted to subscribe into this thing where it's done in batch.
Yeah, for GCM, right, there's one, you know, there's a network socket and that's kind of expensive, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really expensive, but if you have 10 applications, you know, waking up and you know, creating their own network sockets, that becomes really expensive. So by kind of consolidating all those things into one, you save a lot of power and, you know, make a better experience for users.
Is there anything else where developers could benefit from, you know, don't do it this way, use Play Services?
I think
so. Obviously, if your app has a map view in it, you want to switch to this. If your app is doing its own server communication, you want to switch to this.
I think it did radically simplify the OAuth 2 stuff, if I remember some of the talks.
Yeah, so we simplified the authentication. I think the location APIs, we have on older platforms, we have a lot more accuracy in location. So if you're doing location stuff, it's probably a good idea to switch over.
Okay. Are there any mistakes you see people making? Like, hey, you know, they're all calling this API with these wrong parameters. Is there anything like that? Any frequently asked questions?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Like
really, API is so good really that you just can't be confused by it.
No problems at all with it.
Not cloudy at all.
Keep misspelling it. GSP instead of GPS. It's Google Play sort of. It's really common.
Mistake.
Yeah. So actually, stepping back to the analytics thing, I'm always a little confused when people are talking about analytics, because in the web world, they're talking about the other side of it is, how do I get information back from the website that I had? That's one API that the analytics group provides. And then the other one, which you were talking about, is how do I get information on my application and then provide it to a service so that I can check it out?
That was just for the listeners. I just want to point out that Chet did an amazing job with hand gestures here that really would have enhanced your experience if you'd seen the video.
I really hope we publish a video for this one, because I think it does enrich the experience greatly. So anyway, I was going to ask, so you said you don't provide analytics. I know that there's the deep analytics application side of it for Android specifically, but do you provide the functionality where you can get the analytics information from your site or whatever, or is that still that's separate service provided by the developer dashboard?
Yeah, this is kind of separate service provided by the developer dashboard. So what you can do is you can feed these analytics events about your application up to the analytics service, and it will aggregate them and analyze them and kind of present that information to you.
Yep.
Okay. So you can check on user trends and latency reports and that kind of stuff.
Okay. And the other thing I was going to ask about was, so some of my confusion before in attempting to do some of the Google services was that it was never clear exactly what I needed to install. There was something called the Java library for some of the services before. Each one had its own, like analytics has one. So I guess it's the case for all the stuff that you cover now. Like, you don't need these wrapper libraries anymore, these RESTful API wrappers, but instead you just need the Google Play services, and then you call the Google Play APIs, and then that tunnels through.
Yep.
Does the network connection go to the back?
Yeah, so we're trying to kind of consolidate everything into one place. So if you, if you want to do anything with Google services, you grab the Google Play Services SDK.
Yep.
And, once you get that set up once, you're good to go for everything.
Okay. Cool. I don't know if you had anything else on Google Play Services. I think we wanted to ask, before we really started tunneling deeply, what else you've done here? So I should point out that Jeff was here for a long time when I got here, not even four years ago. You were here well before 1.0?
Yeah. So I started in January 2006.
Okay.
So working just shy on 8 years.
Wow. And my understanding is everybody that was working around then was kind of working on everything.
Right.
Such as?
I think the first major project I worked on when I started was getting the GDB debugger stub up and running, so we could connect GDB remotely and actually start to debug code on the device.
So the developers on Android at that time actually wrote bugs?
Yeah. We've fixed that problem since, but
I've never used the debugging connection myself, but
that was an exciting project that involved all sorts of writing some pthreads implementations and things like that, so I'm glad I don't do that anymore.
Okay.
After that I kind of started working on the database system, and so we have SQLite database engine, worked on kind of getting that ported over and up and running. And then kind of when we had a database system in place, then kind of worked on building out content providers and built infrastructure for content providers, and then figured, okay, we're building a phone. All right, let's build a phone book. So I built the contacts content provider called contacts.phonebook. So
you lost that battle.
Yeah. Anyway, so then I started working on UI code because, we've got a database of people we can call. Let's write some UI to call them. Kind of worked my way up the stack and spent a lot of time in Android applications for a couple of years, and then took a little side trip over to NFC for about a year and worked on NFC stack stuff. And I worked on Google Play Games for a while, and that project kind of morphed into Google Play Services.
Because all of their stuff is provided through Google Play Services?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an interesting side note, actually, that is specific to Android. A lot of the other stuff that you talked about is sort of Google overall. So, whereas the game stuff.
No, the Google, Google Play Games is
cross-platform.
Yeah, it's cross-platform.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, so there are SDKs for iOS and also for, you know, for web.
Okay. All right. Do you like how I pretend to not know anything? I'm trying to help the listeners that may not be acquainted with this technique.
Yeah.
Is it working?
Yeah.
Are you falling for it?
It's a very nice technique.
I am. All right.
Yeah. So the Google Play Games is actually really interesting in that you get nice cross-platform stuff. You can do achievements and, you know, all sorts of stuff across platforms. So.
Right. Like lobbies, matching up with other players.
Yeah. So there's some multiplayer support. I'm not sure exactly on the multiplayer support for cross-platform, but.
Okay.
Certainly achievements and leaderboards are cross-platform.
Cool. And now you're doing management, so you go to meetings for a living? Is that right?
Yeah, meetings and email mostly.
Okay. Yeah. Good. What were your status for today say? Talked. Sat
meetings,
down and talked.
Yeah, meetings from 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Okay. But I write code sometimes too. I do a lot of design reviews and code reviews and
well, I think especially since you work on an API project, that sort of having that broad view of Android would really be beneficial to sort of keeping the APIs compatible with the Android way.
Right. Yeah, and we spend a lot of time, working on making sure, because the services are used by a lot of applications that are oftentimes running. So we do a lot of work to make sure we're not using, too much memory or too much battery. Mm-hmm.
Do you just deal with it on the Android side, or do you actually work with the teams that are providing the services as well? Like, if we have a unique take on what a service could provide for Android developers, do you then go into discussions with them about enhancing functionality or changing APIs?
Yeah, I think we primarily work on the Android client side stuff, but to kind of naturally leads to conversations with the people running running the cloudy side of things.
Yes.
We talk to pretty much any team at Google that wants to address developers on mobile. We're chatting with them about how to do that effectively.
Cool.
To work with a lot of people on interesting things.
I am totally out of questions. We heard about your entire history, at least starting at Google.
Aren't we supposed to end with like a call to action? I learned this in class.
Yes. I didn't take that class.
I was thinking we should start adding notes to the episodes with like links to things that people talk about. We should have been doing that for the last 3 episodes. I'd just like to point out this is episode 4.
Best episode ever.
Absolutely. Better every time. So you mentioned the developer console. I'd like to provide that link because I can never find the link myself, as well as the actual Google Play services documentation. That would be helpful.
Yeah.
Anything else to add about library, Android, life, philosophy?
No, I don't think so. I was promised a totem pole, so I'm wondering where that is.
We'll get to that after we stop the recording.
All right. Well, thank you for talking to us.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.